Tonight we ask the question, what is prayer? Or we turn to the doctrine of prayer. We're working through these 20 doctrines every Christian should know. And the first 10 this semester, so to speak, the next 10 next semester. So we'll do Theology 2 will be my class next semester if you'd like to take that. But tonight we look at the doctrine of prayer. Now it's interesting, we talk about prayer a lot, but almost always in practical terms, right? Think about prayer a lot, almost always in practical terms. And certainly our discussion tonight will be practical in nature. But at the same time, it's rare that we stop and think about the doctrine of prayer. So if you have questions about prayer or anything like that, feel free to interrupt. And I'll try to make sure there's time at the end for us to talk about prayer. I like to open every week with quotes and at least part of a hymn if we can. So here's one of my favorite quotes on prayer. It's from Tim Keller. He says, "The only person who dares wake a king for a glass of water at 3 a.m. is a child." And several years ago, this quote really means a lot to me because a few years ago, I found myself waking up in the middle of the night a lot. You can ask these ladies on the front row, I'm not very prone to worry. It's just not my givenness. Now, that's not necessarily godliness. You know, sometimes I probably should be more concerned than I am, you know, but I'm just not very much of a worrier. But I realized I was waking up 2, 3, 4 in the morning and almost worrying exclusively during that time. And it almost felt like I was waking up to worry. Well, then I started worrying about why I was waking up in the middle of the night and worrying, you know, I don't know. Some of y'all may be like good in the middle of the night. I'm not good in the middle of the night. I'm never in a good headspace. 3 a.m. is not a good time for me, you know. So I had a back injury earlier this year, and it was keeping me up at night. And, man, I was just in really bad shape. It's 3 in the morning, you're hurting, and, man, you are just like, I was worried about all kinds of stuff then, too. This was a few years ago. I was waking up worried in the middle of the night. So at some point or another, I got convicted about just waking up. And I mean, it was just like, I was just thinking through improbable scenarios and just the craziest kind of worrying you can imagine. And finally, I got really convicted about it. And I just thought, you know what? Maybe I'm not waking up to worry. Maybe the Lord's waking me up to pray, you know, and these are promptings for prayer. And so this idea that the only person who dares wake a king for a glass of water at 3 a.m. is a child, I wake the king at 3 a.m. plenty often, right? And for simple things. And so, but Keller goes on to say that's the kind of access we have to God as his children. And in prayer, we have that sort of access to God. Let me also quote to you from a great modern hymn, Before the Throne of God Above. Before the throne of God above, I have a strong, a perfect plea, a great high priest whose name is love, whoever lives and pleads for me. My name is graven on his hands, and my name is written on his heart, and I know that while in heaven he stands, no tongue can bid me thence depart or to depart from there. And it's a reminder for us as we embark on a study of the doctrine of prayer tonight. It's a little bit of a reminder for us of the sort of security we have in approaching the throne of God. If you have a Bible tonight, we're going to look at the Bible a little bit. If you don't have one, that's okay. I'm gonna read some to you. But if you open up to the book of James, the New Testament, James chapter 4, the short letters give me a lot of trouble trying to find them. So don't feel bad if you're flipping around a little bit. I want to read to you James chapter 4, 1 through 3. Hear these verses. Hear the word of the Lord. What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Does that make you guys feel better that like churches then fought some too? You know? Okay, it makes you feel better. They had quarrels and fights too. Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? You desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. And you ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly, what? To spend it on your passions. This is a really fascinating passage on prayer, okay? And it's one that I find to be strange in a lot of different ways. First of all, when James here talks about our passions, what he means is those unchecked desires in our hearts, and in fact, unchecked sinful desires in our hearts is what he would mean by passions. Now, there are impulses and instincts we have that can sort of become passions if we're not careful. Okay? So, for example, a good desire God's given us is a desire for sex, for procreation. But we all know and have seen countless situations. We could all name 100 situations right now. You could probably name something you heard about today where that desire that God gave as a good thing is a passion that someone used in a sinful way. Okay? The same with our appetites, our desire for glory. All sorts of things are these passions that are at war in our bodies, Paul says. What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? In other words, that self-centeredness and us focusing on our own sinfulness and own self-centeredness is what tends to cause conflict outside us. Now, our culture, and some of us even might say, the reason that I'm in quarrels and fights sometimes is because drama likes to follow me around. The only problem with that is the drama's probably stuck to the bottom of your shoe, okay? You are the common denominator in every problem you have, okay? And I want you to remember that. Drama probably doesn't follow you around. You probably bring the drama to all the situations you're in if you've ever said that sentence, okay? That might be too much. That might be unkind or unloving, and you're welcome to tell me that later, and I'll apologize. But I've rarely seen a situation where someone had drama around them all the time, where it wasn't because they were focused on themselves. And maybe they weren't responsible for all of it. But, man, you get a lot of self-centered people around, and guess what's going to happen? Fights and quarrels. You know another way I know that? I'm a dad. Okay? And you get 3 kids in a house, and you can see some passions at war. Okay? And you can see fights and quarrels break out. You know, it's very rarely like a kid's mad and they're like, hey, I'm defending the honor of the Lord and I'm angry at you. You know, no, it's you stole my toy. You know, your passions are at war within you. It's so rare that I hear, Mom, Dad. And the next thing I hear, I'm like, man, I'm so proud of them, you know, for this. It's always like, gosh, we all need to get over ourselves. All right. Is it not this, your passions are at war within you? Number two, verse 2. You desire and you do not have, so you murder. Now, I don't think the church that James is writing to is having a lot of murder here. I think he means they hate one another and they use murderous language. If you look back earlier in James, you can see some of that. And I think in a lot of ways, James is a reflection on the Sermon on the Mount and on the teachings of Jesus. And so I think there's a sense here in which James is really trying to shock them to show like these fights and quarrels are not without consequences. They're leading you to hate. And that's something our Lord has equated with murder in our hearts, right? And so you desire and do not have, so you murder, maybe with your words. You covet, you've at least got murder in your hearts, I think he means. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. All right? Y'all see where he is? He's teasing out these passions a little more. Now, notice what he says the antidote to this is. How do we fix it? What's the next step? You do not have because you do not ask. That's interesting, isn't it? Isn't that an interesting antidote? In other words, he's saying, all right, here's the answer to drama in your life. All right, I'm going to go full on 10 steps to a better you. Prayer is the answer to drama in your life. If you're fighting and quarreling and you want to stop, and you should probably want to stop, it's no way to live, start praying. Now, I want you to notice something, though, something interesting about prayer. You ask, you do not have because you do not ask, okay? So that's the first thing, start praying, all right? The first thing James is saying to do, right? You do not have because you do not ask, and if you start asking, you'll start getting what you need, and you're going to stop fighting and quarreling as much. But he says you ask, so some of these people are praying. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrong.